Am I on now?
Yeah.
Okay. Just go ahead.
Welcome back, everybody. I guess we'll just...
Yeah, okay. All right, well, we'll carry on. So I reached that place where I was doomed. And I had nowhere else to go except this simple process. So that was my experience with the first step. One of the things I was taught with the first step and came to mind during the break is one of the purposes of the stories. And the stories serve several purposes, but I can take those purposes and apply them to my recovery, and I can use them as tools as I walk through this book. In the preface of the third edition, it says, if you have a drinking problem, we hope that you may pause in reading one of the 44 personal stories and think, yes, that happened to me, or more important, yes, I felt like that, or most important, yes, I believe this program can work for me too. So I can turn those into questions, each one of those statements, ask myself, as I'm going through this process, it's part of an identification, especially in the first step, trying to establish a foundation. Has that ever happened to me? Have I ever felt like that? Do I believe this program can work for me too? It opens up a purpose for me to walk through this. I get to walk through this specifically to try to identify, to see whether or not I fit, to see whether or not by bringing my memories and experiences to this book, whether or not I belong here. I need to discover whether or not this is where I need to be. So that's one purpose of the stories. Another one. Further on, clear-cut directions are given how we recovered. These are followed by 36 personal experiences. This is second edition. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. So there's another purpose of the stories. I get to see whether or not I identify with these people and how they establish a relationship with God. Higher power or whatever you want to call it. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what's actually happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women desperately in need will see these pages, and we believe it's only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that they will be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. So, another purpose of the stories and a mindset that I can have as I go through this process is be willing to fully disclose myself and see whether or not I fit, and come to see, as a result of the stories, how others came to believe, and see whether or not I can identify with some of the things they did. And I think one of the great hopes that I have gotten out of the stories is not only in identifying and relating with their problem, but the great hope came in the solution that they discovered. And the hope came in identifying in their hopelessness, and where the hope came from for me is, this person drank like me. They felt like me, they thought like me, and this is what happened as a result of doing this. Well, maybe if I do what they did, I'll get what they got. And that gave me great hope. In our personal stories, you will find a wide variation in the way each teller approaches and conceives of the power which is greater than himself. Whether we agree with a particular approach or conception seems to make little difference. experience has taught us that these are matters about which, for our purpose, we need not be worried. There are questions for each individual to settle for himself. So, I don't have to agree with your approach or your conception, but maybe there's something that you're going to add to help me develop that faith and develop that relationship with God that will make sense to me. It doesn't have to make sense to you. It needs to make sense to me. You know, that's one of the great freedoms, I believe, that comes to us in this program, in this spiritual way of life, is we do not have to have another one's belief system. We can discover one for ourselves. But I believe this. I believe that the spiritual life is demanding, and one of the things it demands of me is that I be rigorously honest. And what that means to me is I must practice honesty. I must put honesty into action. And so I can make those self-discoveries along the way and discover a God of my very own and discover a relationship that works for me. Because when I got here, it was after many failed attempts in relationships with God. It was after being exposed to religion and immersing myself in it and being absolutely having a feeling of a separation, having a feeling of guilt, having a feeling that I wasn't good enough to attend that church. And it had nothing to do with them. It had everything to do with me. There was something in me that could not be put to rest, and I didn't know what it was. And one of the discoveries I made here, and I love Dr. Bob's story because I relate to Bob. Because Bob had tried spiritual means many times and had failed. Now consider this. What if Bill came to Bob and said, I've discovered the spiritual solution. I've discovered the answer for us drunks, the Oxford group. And Bob would have looked at him and says, hey, I've been going there 2.5 years. It didn't work for me. But what Bill brought Bob was the first step. Silkworth's description of his hopelessness and of the need for a spiritual change, of a psychic change. And once Bob discovered the problem, the solution worked. So I had a very similar experience. I was exposed to a religion. That's when I first cleaned up. 13 years stayed separated from alcohol through religion and went out and didn't know why. And today I understand why. It had nothing to do with the religion. It had everything to do with trying spiritual means without a solid foundation. I did not know that I was an alcoholic, and I did not know that I suffered from alcoholism. Therefore, spiritual answer without identifying and know what the problem isn't going to work for a guy like me. And I know that based on my own experiences, because I tried that and it didn't work. So then after having those religious experiences and seeing those didn't work, this was where I went. Instead, I looked at the human defects of these people. Found fault with them, just like I found fault with you when I got here. And sometimes I use their shortcomings as a basis of wholesale condemnation. Oh, that church ain't no good because of so-and-so. Had nothing to do with the spiritual principles. It had everything to do with the individual. We talked of intolerance while we were intolerant ourselves. And that was a way of life for me. That wasn't just a drive-by. That wasn't something that happened once in a while. That was my mindset. And I was absolutely oblivious to it. Had no idea that I was intolerant towards other people. I could be in a room and feel so separated and so alienated, and yet I was judging everyone in that room. And I didn't know anything about them. And just go, bag this, I don't want to be here anymore, and leave. We talked of intolerance while we were intolerant ourselves. We missed the reality and beauty of the forest because we were diverted by the ugliness of some of its trees. We never gave the spiritual side of life a fair hearing. Never. Like one of the things that they beg us to do. They say, we have traveled this dubious path. Beg you to lay aside prejudice. Best definition I ever heard is prejudge. Isn't that what I do? Without even knowing you. The clothes you wear, the car you drive, where you work, or whatever. Boom. I place a judgment on you. One of the things I've learned to do here over a period of time is to just remain neutral. It's not my business. You know, and one of the awakenings and realizations is everyone in this room has not only a common problem, a common solution, but we're all God's kids. And so, you know, so the spiritual life teaches me to practice good manners. And over a period of time, I learned that this isn't about throwing stones. We all have faults. We all make mistakes. This is about nursing each other to health. And this is about helping one another on the journey. You know, we don't need any help in the condemnation department from anybody. I think we all did a good enough job on our own. You know, because that's the kind of alcoholic I am. You know, I didn't need to be put down anymore. I put myself down enough. So we have traveled this dubious path. Beg you to lay aside prejudice even against organized religion. We've learned that whatever the human frailties of various faiths may be, those faiths have given purpose and direction to millions. You can't deny that. It seems like people who have a religious or a spiritual life seem to have some kind of purpose, some kind of drive in their life. Actually, we people of faith have a logical idea what life is all about. Actually, we used to have no reasonable conception whatever. We used to amuse ourselves by cynically dissecting spiritual beliefs and practices when we might have observed that many spiritually minded persons of all races, colors, and creeds were demonstrating a degree of stability, happiness, and usefulness which we should have sought ourselves. So rather than pick up their good points and utilize them and incorporate them in my own life, it was easier for me to find fault and to condemn the whole ball of wax. What I've discovered in human relationships, it's no different. Visualize, if you will, a white piece of paper. And on that piece of paper is a black dot. And that black dot represents all the negative things of that individual. So I have a choice. I can make that shift. I can either keep it in the perspective and look at the good things they do and the contributions they make to life, and keep it in perspective that they have that weakness, or I can concentrate on that negativity until the whole page is black and all I see is the bad. And that's what I did with religion. And in my first few years of sobriety, that's what I did with you. Rather than live in the solution and seek a solution and look for the good in others, I condemned everybody and everything because there were some things that I didn't like. There's only three things that I need to start the spiritual journey. It says, let us make haste to reassure you. We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice, there's the first one. I no longer need to prejudge. I need to lay aside my prejudice towards everything. One of the things I was taught is forget everything you know, because what you know brought you here. If you have any truth, and you're willing to throw everything away, the truth will come back and the garbage will go away. And I try to live my life that way today. One of the things I've learned, if I hang on to what I know or what I've experienced, it'd be just like this cup. What's going to happen over a period of time? It's going to be full. There's not going to be no room, no more room. No room for new experience, no room for anything. So I have a vested interest in that, and I'm clinging on to it. One of the things I've learned to do here is to dump that out every day. I get to empty the cup. And what it does, it opens me up to a new experience on a daily basis. So I don't keep a vested interest in what I've experienced or what I think I know. And, you know, and that is not an overnight sensation for someone like me. It's a continual practice, and I do it imperfectly. and I still make mistakes along the way. But as I practice that and pray that I will forget what I think I know, and you know, and Gary alluded to that to the beginning of this deal, is I get to set that all aside. And you know, and that's one of the drastic demands of the spiritual program of action is, although it's sensible, it's drastic because it means I have to throw several lifelong conceptions right out the window. They no longer are my friend. I get to discover that the very thing that was my security blanket was nothing more than a chain that kept me in bondage of self. And I didn't even know it. So one of the first things I have to do is be willing to set aside prejudice. And then the second thing is express a willingness to believe in a power greater than myself. And the third thing is not to let any prejudice I may have against spiritual terms deter me from honestly asking myself what they mean to me. It doesn't matter what they mean to you. What do they mean to me? So I get out of the branding game because that's what religion did for me. And that's why I had a difficulty with. You have to pray this way. You got to believe this way. This is how God is. If you don't do it this way, you're not doing it right. And what I've learned here is that the realm of spirit is broad and roomy. It's all inclusive, never exclusive. And so it's not about the letter of the law in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's about the spirit. And the spirit of the law opens the realm of possibility. Anything's possible. So this isn't about me sharing with you and saying, if you don't do it this way, you're not doing it right. I don't know. I'm showing you and sharing with you what worked for me. What worked for you? I don't know. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. Maybe parts of it apply, maybe parts of it don't. I don't know. I'm not an authority here. I don't know. But what I have discovered is a relationship with a power greater than myself that makes sense for me today. And that has continued to change as I've been here. It's not the same as it was when I got here. In my early sobriety, God was an errand boy. I'd give him a wish list. It's like at Christmas. And then I'd get pissed off when he wouldn't answer my prayers. And then over a period of time, the shift and the change occurred to where the prayer was real simple. Whatever you have in mind is better than what I have in mind. Why? Because my mind don't work most of the time. Over a period of time, I got to trust that. And I was able to build a relationship with God that makes sense to me today. One thing I've discovered about spiritual life, it's not logical. It's not scientific. It doesn't make sense. Like Bill said, common sense would thus become uncommon sense. The spiritual life's practical. It's not logical. Because it's practical, it works. And so, because it's practical, that means that practical application must be taken. I must apply it. I must practice it. We have found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice, express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results. Even though it was impossible for any of us, just another word for all of us, to fully define or comprehend that power which is God. To define God is to limit God. What's God? I don't know. You know, I understand God as much as I do women. I don't. It's just the way it is. And what I've learned over a period of time is that my relationship with God today is based in three premises. It's trust, honesty, and communication. And that has carried over into other relationships. So it appears to me that when my relationship with God is right, all my other relationships appear to be right. And you know, I was one of those twisted ones when I got here. A relationship meant I had a woman in my life and I was getting sex all the time. That's a delusion, isn't it? But that's what I thought it meant. And you know, and I never ever for a minute thought that relationships meant that I learned how to be transparent and vulnerable with other people. And by being vulnerable, I become invulnerable. I'm no longer caught up in that mess of bondage of self. I get set free. At the bottom of 46, this was one of the powerful and freeing paragraphs that really helped me to come to a peace and a term with God that made sense to me. Because I brought all of this religious doctrine, and you know, and I'll share that later on tonight, but I was converted to the Mormon Church in Alaska, went on a mission, was a temple worker for 6 years, taught gospel doctrine and priesthood for 12, and all of a sudden found myself drunk and find myself doing large masses of cocaine on a daily basis and didn't know what happened. Thought God had forsaken me, thought God had condemned me, and I didn't know what was going on. And as I've shared earlier, what I came to discover was it had nothing to do with the religion. It had everything to do with my identification. Although I had many spiritual experiences, the one thing that was missing was that foundation of truth. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. So I practiced untreated alcoholism in a spiritual solution. And it didn't work. And I didn't know, because I didn't know I had it. And I was under the impression that if I just stopped doing the things I was doing and give myself to this, I'll be okay. I had no idea it was so much more than just stopping drinking. So much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. So I came here with a conception that backfired on me. So I was very uncomfortable. Last thing I wanted to hear when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous was how you discovered God and God was working in your life. That didn't work for me. I tried that for 13 years. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with Him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, spirit of the universe, underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek Him. And I got free. That woke me up. God wasn't out to condemn me. He wasn't going to make these big demands on me. He was not going to make too hard of terms for me were I to seek Him. To us, the realm of spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It's open, we believe, to all men. So I got a lot of freedom there, realizing that, yeah, I need to throw away all these ideas I have of God and be open to something new. And then again, another freedom that came to me, and this is how it came for me, very slowly, in beginning to develop a relationship with God. We, in our turn, sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. And that's where I was at in my fourth year of sobriety. I knew that alcohol no longer was a solution. I knew I couldn't drink, but I couldn't live with what I had anymore. And the thought of a bullet sounded good to me. I couldn't stand the pain anymore. I couldn't stand me and I couldn't stand you. And it was the jumping off place. And it was necessary for me to reach that place to surrender. This is what seemed at first a flimsy reed, and that's what it felt like at first. I saw it starting to work in others, and so I had no other options. I had no other place to go except try this simple path in this simple way. What at first seemed a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, or if you prefer, a design for living that really works. And that made sense to me. So I was able to build on that. And one of the things I was taught to do was just keep moving my feet here. Quit thinking. Start doing. It's start taking some action. Didn't make sense. How can I be practicing a spiritual life by going to a meeting early and making coffee? What's that got to do with anything? You know, today in hindsight, I see what it did. It taught me to be responsible. It taught me to be on time. Those were things I don't know about anyone else. I was never on time for anything. I was never responsible. Even separated from alcohol first few years here. And you know, and I'm not proud of that, but that's how it was for me. And I found out through the School of Hard Knocks that separation from alcohol doesn't really mean anything to me. All it means is separation. I have to be doing something. I have to be growing towards something because what I brought here doesn't work. If what I had was so wonderful and worked, why would I be here with you? It's because I ran out of options. I had no other place to go. And you know, and it was people like you who showed me how I could live with this illness that I had that I didn't even know I had, and you know, and make a good go at life and have some direction and purpose in my life and have a satisfying and a happy and fulfilling life. And you know, and it's just so simple. As an alcoholic, I go, man, it's got to be more to it than this. This is too simple. And it's so simple, most of us miss it because we want to complicate this. There's nothing complicated about it except the stuff between my ears. That's where the complication is. I got to get rid of that. And so it started out as a flimsy reed, and it continued to grow, and I continued to get hope, and I continued to get strength as I just followed directions. And there were a lot of moments, and there was a lot of fear, and there was a lot of despair. And, you know, it's not that all of a sudden when I made that commitment that I was going to do this, no matter what, that it just, all those problems went away overnight. No, I was still in a lot of pain. But I had hope. Something was different about what was going on within me. I could feel it and I could sense it. But I had to carry on and do more. The bedevilments on page 52, I'm sure most are familiar with them. Call them the spiritual malady or the unmanageability within. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy, and we couldn't seem to be a real help to other people. Anyone ever feel like that? How about without alcohol? How about in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous after you've been here a while? That was me. And here's the paradox to this. And this can be used as a checklist because here's a list of promises and here's things that will occur providing I'm spiritually fit. And I give myself to this simple program. I have personal relationships. I can control my emotional nature. I'm no longer a prey to misery and depression. I can make a living, not just have a job. I have a feeling of usefulness. I'm not driven by fear. I'm happy, and I seem to be a real help to other people. And isn't that what I've always wanted all my life? Absolutely it is. And I tried to get it in the bottle, and I tried to get it in relationships, and I tried to get it with a new Harley or a new house or a new car, and the shine always went away. It was always temporal. And one of the things I've discovered about the spiritual life is this is where I can get strength. This is where I can get something that's permanent and effective. And that's what they set me up with in the second step for the third step, because it can be a permanent and effective deal. And the permanence and effectiveness in it is in my relationship with God. Relief is temporal. Doesn't last. However, strength can become permanent and effective. And the way that I gain my strength is through my weakness. Today, my weakness is my strength. Fear didn't make a lot of sense to me when I first got here. But because of my weakness, I can have strength today. Because I have nowhere else to go but to God. And that's where the second step takes me, to that place. And then this was another eye-opener for me. All my life, I thought God was out there somewhere. And this spiritual path teaches me that great reality is deep down within me, just like it is with you. So as I get rid of the garbage in my life, I come to make a discovery that the God in me sees the God in you, and that we all came from the same place. And that it's not about trying to let God in. It's more about letting him out. He's always been there. Just been unaware. So actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child's fundamental idea of God. Everyone has it. We might not recognize it for what it is. We might be afraid of it. We might run from it. But we all have that fundamental idea of God. And here's the things that will block me. It may be obscured by calamity, by all that chaos within, by pomp, by my ego, by my self-reliance, by worship of other things. For me, it was Harleys, it was Brazilians. You know, there's just a couple examples. I could go on with just a list. It was my vanity. What it was. But in some form or other, it's there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup. Just who we are. Just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to surge fearlessly. That's where a fourth step comes in. But he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. So it's a fact. It's not a theory. It's not a belief system. It's a fact. We found the great reality deep down within us. In the last analysis, it's only there that he may be found. It was so with us. That last analysis is 4-9. It allows me to get rid of the debris in my life that blocks me. Here's an analogy I like to use. You have a water faucet on the side of a house. And you're running a hose from it. You turn it on. What occurs? Water flows through the hose, comes out of the other side. What happens if there's kinks in the hose? No water comes down. But the power's on. Power's always been on. So it is with me. And here was one of the great discoveries. Every kink that's in that hose, you didn't do it. I did. I put every kink in that hose. I created those obstacles and I created those blocks. I created the block in that flow. And so what I get to do in that last analysis of 4-9 is unkink the hose so that the power of God will flow through me freely and openly, and it's available to anyone who wants it. And so how do I do that? I do silly things like make amends, write an inventory, take a third step prayer and make a commitment. And that commitment is I don't go back to the way that I used to live. It's over. It's done. And then I make a commitment to carry on doing those things. I believe the first few times through the steps, it's like a ladder. And there's 12 rungs, so there's 12 steps. But they don't go up. They go in. And I got to go in to get out. And, you know, there's only one price I have to pay here to get free. But it's a big price to pay, and it's not easy. And, you know, and the steps allow me to start that destruction of self, because that's what I got to get rid of. You know, and Bill said, simple but not easy. Price had to be paid. Everyone here, you want the spiritual life, you got to pay a price. It meant destruction of self-centeredness, not just a partial removal. So it's not about trimming the tree. It's about going to the very root of the self-centeredness. So I have this self-centeredness, and it's like a tree. I can trim it, and all that's going to happen is it's going to grow, and it's going to become stronger, and it's going to be bigger. But if I go to the very root, pull it up, it's going to be removed, and it's going to create a space. And that's where God can step in and do his job. And so I have to destroy my self-centeredness. And I must turn in all things to the Father of light who presides over us all. And the way we get to experience that is by taking these steps and applying them in our life. So the first few times through, I'm going in to get out. Then as I start to get out, it becomes a circle of safety. And those 12 steps are just like a clock. There's no beginning and there's no end. And they become the practicing, working principles and tools in my life. And as long as I'm in the center of those, I'm in a safe and protected place. Because one of the purposes of the steps is not only to teach me how to be honest and to get along with others and give me a design of living, it's going to bring me to that power source. It's going to bring me to God. And so as long as I continue to practice those 12 steps and stay in the center, I'm in a safe and protected place. And I reach that place that where I am, God is, and I no longer walk alone. And so the third step sets the arena for the change to start to take place. I have never turned my will and my life over to the care of God, and I never will. And what I mean by that is I'm powerless. How am I supposed to do that? I make a decision. And based on that decision, I seek power to take actions that I'd rather not take. God's will doesn't always feel good. You know, anyone who's done inventory knows that. But is that God's will? I think it is. Going and making amends, paying back the money, going to people that you know you screwed over, and facing them. Is that God's will? I think it is. Does that feel good? I think the outcome does, but it doesn't feel good when I have to do some of them. So I have to face and be rid of all those things that block me. And this is where the third step comes into play. So we've looked at the first two steps and at the ABCs. And so am I convinced of that? Am I convinced that I'm an alcoholic and I cannot manage my own life? Or am I under the misbelief or misconception that all I have to do is stop drinking and I can manage my life? Do I have manageability skills? I don't. I need a manager. I need a director and a protector because I don't know how to live. I do not believe this journey is about getting power. I believe it's about being conscious of power and surrendering to power and allowing the power to dictate policy in my life. Because I don't know how to live. What would I do with power? Absolutely what I did with everything else in my life. I'd abuse it. So I don't think it's about getting power. I think it's about being conscious of the power and surrendering to the power. I don't think that acceptance is the answer. I think that surrender is. I can accept that I'm an alcoholic. I can admit that I have a problem. But unless I take action, all the admitting and all the accepting in the world isn't going to change anything. And surrender sets that pace. And what's 4 through 9? Nothing more than an action of surrender. I'm surrendering my self-will. I'm identifying the negative things in my life. I'm going to go through a process of discovering the vicious cycle that has kept me separated from you and from God and kept me in a sickened state. And I'm going to discover a way to get out of that. And I'm going to be given tools along the way that will allow me to maintain a spiritual condition providing, I continue to do some simple things. And so I need to be convinced of those first two steps before I go into the third one. I like what the original manuscript said. If you are not convinced on these three pertinent ideas, we suggest that you reread the book to this point or else throw it away. I'm glad they changed that, because I probably wouldn't be here today. I probably would have been one of those who threw it away. And you know, and here's something else that just comes to mind. And I know there's some new people here, and I'm glad you're here, and I hope you hear something that will help you on the journey. And if you're alcoholic, I want you to know you'd never have to drink again. But I also want you to know something. You're not the most important person here. I don't believe that. And I'll tell you why. If you're an alcoholic like me, and the newcomer is the most important person here, what would you always be? I'd always be a newcomer. I'd continue to relapse because I'd be the most important person in the meeting. That's how I think. We're all important. Every one of us is equally important. Every one of us is here to help build one another and to strengthen one another, and I look at it like a cable. Each one of us is a strand. Left to myself, one strand. Am I going to hold up the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco? No, it's going to fall. But together, intertwoven, creating that cable, creating that rope of hope, what happens? The bridge stands up on its own. So my strength comes from each and every one of you. And that's where I get my hope as well. Because we're on this journey together. So I cannot recover on my own. I need you. I need you more than you need me. And there is no one person in this room more important than the other. We're all important. We're all in this together. We can either stay afloat or we can sink. So am I convinced that probably no human power could relieve my alcoholism? I am. And, you know, and I shared some instances out of my life where I tried. It didn't work for me. I tried all kinds of means. I even tried religion. It didn't work because I didn't have a solid foundation. That God could and would if he were sought. And being convinced of that, I'm at step three. So I make that decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. So in other words, once I make this commitment, my life is no longer any of my business. It's not a matter of taking it back. It's a matter of letting it go. It's not my concern anymore. However, the conduct of my life is. I believe that the third inventory isn't just a sex inventory. It's a conduct inventory, and we'll look at that this afternoon. I'm responsible for my conduct today, how I conduct myself. That's one of the codes of spiritual principles. Spiritual principles are rules or codes by which I conduct myself. So once I make that surrender and make that commitment in the third step, what am I really committing to? I'm committing to a spiritual practice. I am going to commence a spiritual activity to face and be rid of the things that block me from the power of God so that I can fit myself to be of maximum service to God and those about me. It's not about doing the steps to the best of my ability. It's not about writing an inventory to the best of my ability. It's about offering myself to God and allowing Him to direct and protect me so that I can face and be rid of those things, because there's a lot of ugliness there. And there's things I don't want to look at. And there's things I'd rather run away from. And so if I don't sense that I'm powerless and need that power to direct me, I'm not going to do those things. And if I don't sense that I'm safe and protected, I'm certainly not going to put pen to paper so you can see it. I have to really sense that. And feel that I am safe and protected. And feel that this is the way I have to do it. And unless, you know, unless I have that power, it's not going to happen. Because I'm not going to look at myself in that respect. I'm not going to do these to the best of my ability and get set free. I need to surrender. I really need to mean it in the third step. So the first requirement is I be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, I'm always in collision with something or somebody, even though my motives are good. And one of the things that I've learned in recent years is motives, and they talk about it in a few places in the book. Good or bad can trip me up. I cannot live a life by motives and remain spiritually fit and free. I must live a principled life. I must live a life by principle. And there's a big difference. Because my motives, and you know, and I could change that to intentions. Anyone ever had good intentions in their life? I was so deluded when I got here, even the first few years here, that I couldn't understand why people were angry with me in the workplace, and because I always had good intentions, but my actions stunk. And I just couldn't understand why they'd be angry with me, because I meant well. I just didn't do well. And you know, one of the things I learned here is, you know, my actions better be speaking louder than my words. I gotta move my feet. And one of the things I've learned in recent years is this really is about demonstration. My feet ought to be making so much noise, you don't hear a word I say. And so this is about a demonstration. And that was some delusion that I was caught up in for, you know, 43 years. Really believing that I had good intentions, good motives, and couldn't understand why I was just creating all these messes in my life. It's because my actions stunk. My feet weren't moving, but my lips were. And I've learned over a period of time, I gotta practice this stuff. I gotta take it somewhere. I gotta incorporate it in my life, and I gotta move my feet in a positive direction. So most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person's like an actor who wants to run the whole show. I remember first reading that, oh, not me. I would never try to do that. Then I got to bring some of my experiences to it, and it's totally what I do. I'm forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest players in my own way. If my arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as I wish, show would be great, wouldn't it? If they just do as I wished. You know, and those of you in relationships, you ever have that feeling? Oh, if she just cooked my meals on time. If she'd just do this for me, and you know, if she'd just listen, we'd get along great. If she'd just follow my lead. I had that delusion for so many years that, well, there's a lot of great qualities. I really like her. I think we can work on it, and over a period of time, I can fix her. And I never had those ideas going on. It's like, yeah, I'll convince her that, you know, she is a good person, but she just needs to improve in these areas, and then she'd be okay. And you know, and then to come to the realization that was my delusion and that was my control issue. And you know, and one of the awakenings that I experience is I am what I am and that's all I am. And you know, and what I get to be in Alcoholics Anonymous is I get to be me. And one of the freedoms that come with that is I get to allow other people to be themselves too. And one of the things that I learned in sponsorship with working with other people is it's not about trying to prod them or to trick them or to push them. It's about loving them and allowing them to have their own experience. And that's what I get to do in relationships today. I can love people unconditionally, allow them to have their own experience, and they are who they are and I am who I am. And that's okay today. I don't have to try to change anybody. Did it ever work? No. What happened? Not only would I get them mad, but I'd be mad and it'd be all their fault. And that's what happened every time. And so, Everybody, including myself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. And in trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. And what usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play doesn't suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he's sure that other people are more to blame. Always the other person's fault, never me. That's the kind of self-centeredness I brought here. Can that still occur today? You bet it can. Does it? Once in a while, not as often, but it still can. And I had a lot of self-centered fear coming here. And I was very disappointed and hurt that my sponsor wasn't going to be here this weekend. And I understand he's going through another trial right now, and it's a tough deal. But you see, there's my selfishness again. It's like, well, I'm not going to be able to spend time with him. Always thinking about me. Not thinking about, you know, he's in a bad place and I need to pray for him and his family that he can get through this. You know, because he has been a great influence and demonstration to me of these principles and of this life. And you know, and not only in his words, but in his demonstration. He truly is one of those who puts God first and foremost in his life. And, you know, and he shows me that by the way he lives his life. And so I can begin to feel that life doesn't treat me right. And so I exert myself more. And what happens? It just gets worse. It's worse every time for me. The more I attack the problem, the greater the problem becomes. And then I become self-pitying, and I become angry, and I blame you for what's going on with me. And I think this is one of the delusions that gets me more today than anything else. And it's simply this: am I not a victim of the delusion that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if I only manage well? That can still get me today. And I need to be convinced that I cannot manage my life well, and I need a manager. And that's what the rest of the third step is about. I think it's about time for lunch, so we'll end there and we'll wrap up the third step and look at 4 through 9 after lunch. Thank you.